So, hi everyone. Last session of the day. Well, we have something else planned after this session, but it's more like Ask the Experts. And we still have loads of stuff to give away. Very expensive stuff, thanks to our sponsors. Now, this session handles about media in Skype for Business. So we've talked a lot about where you can see or how to optimize Skype for Business on the network, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you haven't done anything in your power to do to optimize Skype for Business and how it works, but it is usually the network, right? Because there's always something which you don't know about, which the network admin doesn't know about, and stuff can happen. So people ask me sometimes, like, can you explain to me how does Skype for Business work and how is the media flowing? I'm like, okay, I may need a full day to explain everything because it's just too complex. So this session is essentially kind of like a bundled approach, how you can look how the media is going and what can happen on the network. So let's get started. So thank you, sponsors. And don't forget, we are giving away very expensive stuff from Ferrari, from Fujitsu and Plantronics. And thanks to our other sponsors too. Now, I hope you all know me because I don't want to talk too much about myself, but I'm Johan Delimon, Skype for Business MVP for several years. I work for large system integrators, Microsoft, and some hosting companies. So if you want to know more, because I'm not going to tell all the details there is about SIP and SDP and how the media is set up and how the signaling works, but if you want to know the nitty-gritty details, I already have a recording from Ignite, so I would encourage you to go there. I do have to repeat some of those things because, well, I have to explain how it works. So first of all, I'm going to explain a little bit about SIP, but not too much because it's a bit short. Some of the configuration settings we need to look at because Skype for Business looks into the server, whether it's online or Skype for Business on-premise. It receives settings from the server. It says, this is what you can do and these are your settings, so use them. Now, it can change or we have to troubleshoot something. Even in Skype for Business Online, you can see a lot, like because all the logs are visible. Now, SIP and SDP, they work together to set up media because SDP is traveling inside the SIP packets or the SIP signaling. And they explain how are you going to set up the media streams. So we're going to dive a little bit into that. And then we'll look at internal calls, which means internal clients only. And then we'll look at edge scenarios and external connections. And obviously we look at Cloud Connector and some hybrid deployments too. So in the longer talks of the recorded session, you will see a lot of this slide because it will explain how it works. So signaling always go to the server. The media will be between the two endpoints, which is Skype for Business client, Skype for Business client, and the media will go direct. Well, I would say most likely because stuff can happen, right? And it's not our fault, right? Well, but we can talk about it and we can see what's going on because we can read everything that's going on in Skype for Business. So this is most likely going to happen, although it's one of the few scenarios. Now, who of you knew the Snooper tool? So that's a very good thing because you can read everything in Snooper, even all the logs collected from Office 365. So it's a client-side log that's going on the client. It's hidden somewhere deep in the folders, but you can look at it and you can actually see everything, the settings provisioned in Office 365, and you can see all the SIP signaling and the media setup and even the final connection, what's going to happen. So it's your friend, it's visible, you can read everything. So that's very good for us because we are humans and we can read text. Now, the provisioning is kind of important because that's the first step, and in the provisioning, it means the client logs onto the server, downloads all the settings. Now, there are very interesting settings to see, and they will be different depending on what environment you have. But I'll highlight those to you, and let's see, can I zoom in? Yeah. So I have port ranges, mean audio port range, maximum audio port range, video port range. So they are pushed from the server. So if your network team or someone else configures Skype for Business and you're looking at optimizing media quality, you find this in the SIP logs because it's pushed by the server to the client and you can read it. If you want to know how you can read it, go to my session and you probably will see it. But this is important because on the Skype for Business on-premise deployments, you will see some other values, right? So these are the values from Office 365. It may be the same or may not be the same in your deployment. It's up to you to configure this. But this is the first step. So we need to know what are the port ranges because this is going to happen. Media is going to flow over those ports. So it's called in-band provisioning. That's kind of like getting policies and settings. Now, if you look at Office 365 port configuration, now these are clients, right? So it's for the clients. So these are the default ports. If you don't do anything in a Skype for Business environment on-premise, this will be the ports. Now, is it a lot? Yeah, probably yes, like 64,000. And then you haven't to tell network guys like open those ports. They're like happy. Probably not, right? So, but luckily Office 365 actually already has some customized ports, like 50,000 to 50,019 for audio, and then we have for video. Unfortunately, I think still app sharing and file sharing use the same ports. Well, it's not, we cannot do anything about it. Like it's by Microsoft, they have configured it. We have to work with it. Like, but if you want to differentiate between app sharing and file sharing, maybe a little bit difficult, although feed-based screen sharing would use UDP, so maybe, but still, it's not ideal. So I definitely also need to talk about media relay because relaying is what Edge server does, and Edge server plays a very, very important role in Skype for Business, not alone for Skype for Business on-premise, also for online, and certainly in hybrid scenarios too. So one of the important things here that you see is a username password. So a username password is something that we need to connect to Edge, and Edge is going to secure the sessions, and if you don't have the correct password, it will say, no, I don't know you, go away, I don't want to talk to you. So password is giving in the SIP as well. So, you know, read the password, but you shouldn't be able to do a lot with it. But the other important thing in here is, and it's exactly the same for on-prem and online, of course, intranet is only used in Skype for Business on-premise. Now, it means URLs in the ports, so I'll make it a little bit bigger. So these are the URLs in the ports where we know our Edge server is located. So the client knows the URLs, knows the ports, to connect to. Obviously, I think you can change them, but you would never do that. But important, so like these settings are pushed and we can read it. We know, okay, this is the name of the Edge server. Like I did want some troubleshooting, just looked at this and I said, like, let's ping them. And it didn't work. Like, okay, stuff is wrong. It should work. So, but for Office 365, we will obviously have only the internet piece here. So in my case, it's this specific Edge. This specific Edge is probably located somewhere in Amsterdam, most likely. So, but keep in mind that we get those credentials during sign-in, that we keep them for, I think it's 8 hours, and then it's going to be refreshed. And we know where the Edge is located. Now, this is going to be important when we talk about tunneling mode. It's kind of like a fallback if something's not configured the way we want. And if you see MRAS, Media Relay Authentication Service, just think about that. Now, if your client or your server, I have to say your frontend server cannot connect the edge, you'll always say this in the client. Like the client will say, well, I have some issues connecting to edge because I don't have the credentials. I cannot connect. So it's not the client that needs to connect to, well, it needs to connect, but also the frontend server to get the credentials from edge for the user. So that's an important step. So port 5062 is something on the edge internal side, which you get the credentials, but it's the server doing it for you. So, but the client is sending media directly to edge, right? But the credentials coming through the server. Now, this is kind of like the base thing. Like now we know about the settings and how all this is set up. But then, okay, we need to start communicating and then we're going to create a session, like a media session. We're going to call someone. So, and this is essentially transported in the SDP with this session description protocol. So it describes how you set up the media. And it's still text, but it's a little bit more difficult texts. But in the end, I hope you will be able to read it. Otherwise, the session was not so good. So sometimes when someone talks about the call is essentially the SIP dialog, it's not the media. It's a little bit confusing. Some of you say, I want to see the call flows, but that's the SIP stack trace. And the media is essentially just the media. It doesn't have anything to do with SIP, although the setup of the media is included in the SIP. So you see in the invite, we actually include all the information that's necessary to connect to that endpoint, to our endpoint, essentially. And then we get a response, and then the other guy is going to respond with his configuration. So the description. Now, this is how it looks like. So all of this text, so I'm a little bit ignoring the rest of the message, but this text is, well, this is just a part of the SDP, right? So the SDP is the entire message here, or the body. But the SDP really is like, we are going to create some IP addresses and ports for someone else to connect to us. Where are we going to send it to? Now, it's a fairly long list. You don't need to remember this. You just need to remember three things. I'll explain it to you. So there is one interesting thing, which is called host, which is the host, which means the client, the computer, or your iPhone or your whatever smartphone, your device. So they have IP addresses because otherwise we cannot connect. So host is from the device itself. Okay, go away. Now we have other types of candidates too, which is called in this case relay. Okay, I actually turned on my Twitter, but it keeps on coming. So relay, it's what it is. Like it's relay, it's coming through edge, and it's going to be relayed by edge. Now there is one special which requires attention too, which is reflexive, which is below here. So let me do it this way. Reflexive, it's a special one, and I will tell you what it is. Now, I don't expect you to read this now and to understand it, but you will probably understand it when you do this a few times. So of course we have the invite and the response, so we have to send it both ways, and exactly the same, the other party is going to send the candidates. Now, okay, so this is a summary of what is all important in the SDP. So essentially what it says here is candidates. So what we talked about, host, relay, reflexive. And then we have, for example, M equals audio. It means it's an audio session. And this is the priority of the codecs. Like we have the priority here. And you remember Steven talked about codecs. So all the codecs are in here. So now in this case, you can clearly see this is not a rich Skype session is going to be a PSTN call because we have a very limited set of codecs. But I'm not really talking about codecs, I'm really talking about the network now. So for me, this is the most important point, and we have to remember this. Now, I told you there are three types which you have to remember because they will always be there. Well, maybe one item not, but you have to remember those three. So the first one is the host, which we talked about, is the endpoint IP address. You could have multiple IP addresses, could get more complex, and we will go into that scenario. Now, this turn reflexive, let me see, there's an animation. So this is host IP. So in this case, we are talking from one client to another client directly from host IPs. Now, it's probably a bad arrow because they're firewalls, so it wouldn't work. But imagine this call would work. It would be from IP1 to IP2, so the both endpoints would get direct media connectivity. Now, in case this doesn't work, Skype, and it's been way back since communicator, like OCS days, so it's been there for a long time. It's very mature. Been several revisions of the way this works, but it's very mature. So the next thing the client also does, so it will check, like, and usually it's from this side to there. And what we will do is we want to try to discover, because we have a private IP and we have a public IP on this router. So it's a firewall, it's a router, you have public IPs because your network is probably private IPs. So we have two different IPs and we want to know what is the public IP of this router so that we can send something to it. But of course, this client needs to be updated with its public address. It's like, it should like, look, what's my address? It's very difficult. So, but luckily we have Edge Server, which is in the mix, which actually knows like if this guy is sending something, we know the public IP address because otherwise we're not able to send something. So we send that back like, hey guy, I know what your IP address is, so use this. So, and in most cases it can work, but of course this can also be blocked, so it won't always work. And then the last one, which is the least priority, if nothing works, then we go over Edge. It will always be relayed. So the last priority. So all of these things happen at the same time. So don't go with the network analyzer and try to pinpoint like what's happening here is doing so many connections. You won't be able to see anything because it's just a broadcast type, just tries to connect everywhere. Okay. Now, like I said, we have host candidates, stun. Okay. We have host candidates, relay candidates for Edge Server. They're called turn candidates. So essentially you have to look at it like you get a packet from somewhere and the Edge Server takes the packet, it turns around and sends the packet somewhere else. So it's turning, relaying. And then we have last ones or the reflexive ones, although they're not in the right order. The order is created by some value you see in here. And the lowest value wins. So it's not the right order, but you can figure it out. But you know, host is priority one, reflexive two, and then relay last. Now, it's a big list, but if you divide them between those three options, it's more visible and you can read it, right? Now, and this is so beautiful. So if you're troubleshooting and your call succeeds, I really say it needs to succeed in this case, you can see what is the actual IP address that I use and what's the remote IP address that's being used. So this is a re-invite and it's sent like between 5 to 10 seconds after the initial invite. So what happens is we send all the candidates, stuff happens on the client that try to connect everywhere. They figure out a way to connect and maybe they can connect multiple ways and they will do that. And then they figure out, okay, now, yeah, it seems that we can connect directly, so let's use that. And in that case, they will send an update like, okay, this is the final stuff that we're using, and now we're good to go. We keep on using this unless something happens on the network. But I'm not sure if it's dynamic during the call. But all that stuff happens. But immediately you can see all of those things. So, and of course, in the other, you see all the IP addresses. Like, for example, the relay, you will see the edge server IP address, and you will see the public address of your router somewhere, if I can find it. But just looking at SDPs, I have to do anything. I could troubleshoot something a company was looking for, like for a full week. I could look at one SIP call, and I could say like, why are you sending, or you're sending to this IP address? And immediately saying like, why is it using this address? It's like, you're using it in Skype for Business because it's configured in the topology. Like you need to, when you do NAT, you have to configure your public IP address. It's in the topology. And if someone changes ISP, they usually forget to update public IP. So just looking at this, I could say like, is this the correct address? And they said, no, so that's your problem. So it's so we're all good. So let's look at internal media flows. So this is the easy part, and then it gets more complex. So assume we have an internal network. There's Skype for Business server. We have two clients connected internally. So obviously this guy wants to call that guy. So they're going to set up a media session. So of course, signaling will go that way, but we'll not talk about that. So of course, the SDP will be negotiated, and they will see like, oh, let's try. And in this case, of course, there's no edge, so not so much happens because we just send the local host IPs. So this guy is to send the media over to that guy, and this guy is also going to send media that side. And obviously, where is it going to send? Like we know it's the IP address, and there's also a port. I didn't talk about the port. The port is in here, for example, 50,000 and 50,001. So these are our ports that we can use. So the other guy needs to send to those ports. So our IP address and our port, they are known, it's visible in the SDP. So we know where to send it to. So in this case, it's obvious. It's going to be point to point, peer to peer. We're happy everything is working. Now, it's obviously going to be most likely the path we're going to take because stuff can happen, right? It happens a lot. You probably notice. So a lot of times there's some stuff in between that blocks us from doing this. Is it good? Probably not, but we can work around it if we know it. But if you don't know there's something in between, because the network guys will say, no, we don't have firewalls. No, no way. We don't do that. And then it doesn't work. Like, wait a minute, maybe we have like somewhere stored very far away. So of course, this is not going to work because firewall is going to block. Now, we can say like, well, we have 64,000 ports which you can open. It's like, yeah, not going to happen, of course. So, but luckily we can minimize the ports, like 20 for audio, 20 for video. You can do more, but at least you need 20. So in that case, they punch a hole in the firewall, and then we are happy again, and we can send media back and forth. So it's good. Yeah, and too many times we have to do this. Now, I just want to reference like the media ports because it's important, and obviously for the networking people also. Like by default, we actually use those 64K ports, and we have the same ones for audio, video, app sharing, file sharing. Obviously, yeah, that's probably not what we want to use. Now, on the server side, we use different ports, and they are a little bit different. Like we have, for example, the audio in this range, the video in this range. And unfortunately, by default, app sharing actually stretches those both ranges. That's by default, if you don't do anything. Is this good? I don't really like it, so we probably do it some way else. So for the server, we can actually say, and you see this in a lot of blogs and posts, and I think even in the Microsoft networking guide, they have this, like, move this port range somewhere else. You don't really have to, but I think it's more clear, right? So we do this. Now, then we have the choice for the media ports, because we can choose. So I would say let's keep audio in the audio port range, video in the video port range, app sharing in the app sharing port range for clients. And then for files, there's nothing on the server. Let's keep that somewhere else. Now, Office 365, again, we cannot configure it. It works. Let me see, do I have this? Okay. So Office 365 actually has all the ports in the audio, but of course it's a cloud service. It's probably, it doesn't matter so much, but for an on-prem deployment, it's pretty important. So, but it's a choice. You can do that. You can choose not to do it. You can have different configurations on-prem or in the cloud. So let's look. Another option is, of course, to keep client ports completely separate from server ports. It's up to you. But of course, the firewall rules still need to match, right? And it's also to server, and the server has a big port range. Usually that's not an issue because it's just a fixed set of IPs. Network people say like, okay, that's fine. But if you say any of my clients, any, they're like, it's really any, right?
Is there any traffic coming from online detect?
Good question. Do you guys know that? ExpressRoute needs to do something, right? If traffic from Office 365 is tagged by DHCP values for QoS.
It is, but then it gets spotted if the internet provider gets
stripped.
So if you have ExpressRoute, it does. If you have the very expensive version of ExpressRoute, it stays tagged. But it's the port range that you just chose?
No, connecting to, well, you'll see, connecting to Edge is completely different if you're from the outside. So this is talking from the inside. So it was because now I'm going to talk about Edge scenarios, which is different, right? No, you still connect to the Edge servers in Office 365, even if you have ExpressRoute, which is maybe weird, but it's understandable from a Microsoft perspective, because why would you be able to connect directly? Kind of security maybe sometimes. So this was the easy part, like internal only without Edge. Okay. So if we add just Edge server, we don't do anything special. We block ports, they're not open yet, and we haven't done right testing. Several stuff can happen, but this will always be going on your network. So from the moment that you apply an Edge server to a pool, this will happen. So all of these things, like you get the credentials from when you log in, you do the candidate discovery, like we're going to try where to find IP addresses and ports. Let's go to try, like it's like a broadcast storm. And then we say, okay, now we know our IP addresses that can be used. So we're going to send it over to the other side in SDP. So, and then the other guy is going to try to connect to all of the information you sent. Like if it's a list of, you saw maybe 20 different IPs and ports, it will connect, try to connect to all of those. So, and then the last piece is the re-invite where you see the candidate promotion, like this is exactly the IP that we are using for this call right now. Now, there are some rules, IPv4 before IPv6, relay, direct over relay, and UDP over TCP. So also in the candidates, you will see UDP and TCP, but not for all scenarios, like direct will not go over TCP. But if you're from external or internal, you could connect to Edge over TCP, which is not a good thing, but it can. Now, that means when the Edge server is configured, so remember in the first scenario we had like a local candidate. Now in this scenario we are going to add an Edge server candidate. Well, I'm just referring to one, but you will see multiple because we have UDP, TCP, and maybe active passive. But all the clients are actually going to look for a local IP and an IP on the Edge. So in this scenario, we are still going to send directly to this IP and directly to this IP, unless the network is behaving not the way we want and it's blocked. So in that case, we still are going to do connectivity over Edge, and then this is just one stream. So we're going to relay over Edge. So at least we have a media session going on, which is good, but there's a potential issue there, because if your Edge server is in Singapore, you will go to Singapore, connect to someone sitting next to you. So it can happen, right? But at least we have a session going on. Now, the beauty of it is, you can easily look for it, and Microsoft has some tools for it. I will come back to that. Now, are those the only endpoints that are going to do ICE connectivity, negotiation, the entire ICE process? Now, there are other components too, like I include a mediation server. Now, the mediation server is also an endpoint, so he will also do that. He will Edge as well, exactly the same way as the clients do, which may be surprising, right? I see you're looking like, what? Yeah, it's really true. So we had an issue one time that the mediation server was blocked from coming to Edge, and then it takes a few seconds, well, up to 5-6, for this mediation server to understand that it's not able to connect, and the call setup is going to be delayed. Now, in this scenario, users were forwarding their phone, the Skype for Business phone, to a mobile phone. So you get an incoming call, which is delayed, an outgoing call, which is going to be delayed, and then the call setup at the provider is going to take a little bit longer. So people were just putting down the phone and there was no call. So servers need to connect Edge too. Okay, so I already explained that. Okay, maybe it was a front-end server and this is the mediation server, right? But it's the same explanation. Now, I don't know. Not sure. Yeah. I haven't really looked at it, but IP4 is apparently be higher at, and you can even look at the numbers, like you can put the numbers next to each other and then whoever is the smallest will win. Not sure, I found it in some presentation, so I decided to add it. I didn't check it. I believed it, so.
Still, direct connection is preferred. The connection is possible via IPv6, and it will take
yeah, IPv6. Exactly. Now, we talked about Edge and we're talking about internal, but now we're moving to the external side of our company. Now, of course, NAT is going to be an interesting networking scenario because NAT and NAT is not always the same, which is also confusing. So if you say, will this media always go this way? It will depend. So that's my favorite sentence, always, it will depend. It's really true. So this is kind of like to explain how NAT works. So we have a private IP and we have a public IP. Now, if we are going to send, for example, to this user, we are going to send, but of course this user is not going to see our private IP, it is not going to be visible, right? So we will always see this public IP address. Yeah, I think my pen is a little bit skewed. So we will see this public IP address, and then it's up to the net to remember, like, where did we send it, or the IP address and the port being that sending this packets, we are going to keep track. Like, so the user A has an IP and a port, and the firewall has a public IP and a port. So they mix this together and they keep track in memory, probably. So if someone sends a packet to this public IP and port, he knows where to send it. Just send it to the client. Now, in this scenario, we have a full cone net, and a full cone net means we just take a look at the private IP and port and the public IP and port, and we don't care about anything else. So that means this user can also send to this client because the net device doesn't care who is sending. We're just sending on a public IP and port, and it will just send it to the client. Now, this is a big deal. So if you have full cone net, I'm pretty happy because then the media will be better than if not. So there are other nets which are address restricted nets, which, for example, say, okay, we are going to send something to user B, and then user B is stored in a table like, okay, everything coming from this IP address and going to my public IP and port, we know where it's coming to, and we send it to the client. Now, of course, this user can now no longer send any packets to this IP and port because they say, like, well, it's a different IP address. So this will block, like, your home router scenario going directly to some other endpoint. And we will see in a few scenarios. Now, you can have one more, which is address and port restricted. So it's even more restrictive, but is essentially the same result. Now, there is on Wikipedia, I found it on Wikipedia because I had to look it up how it worked. But essentially, that's what it is. Now, the external flow scenarios. Now, there are many things to the mix. We have now internal clients, external clients. So these are the internal ones, the external ones. So now, obviously, all the IPs and ports are going to be discovered. So this guy will have at least these things somewhere on the edge. And this guy will also have a port on the edge. And essentially, they are both on the external side because edge only listens to those ports on the external side. Not that the client will connect this way. It will connect internally, and Edge will bridge it internally. So you shouldn't have your clients connecting to Edge because that's not how it's supposed to work. So, but in that case, of course, this client is going to try to connect to this one because, well, it will try to connect to some IP, but it doesn't have a clue where to go to if it's a private IP. So that will not work. So he will have to send through Edge because there's no other way. So he will have to send it directly to Edge. So, and this guy will send it to Edge, but obviously he will try first because he has a public IP. He will first try to do this. Now, the other guy is sending this way. Now, is this ever going to happen? So I see someone nodding no, and you say yes. So it depends.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you want this to happen, but it depends. Like, if the firewall, so if those two allow outbound, why wouldn't it work? Like, it will work, and we will use direct. So, and you can have different media paths for incoming and outgoing, like, and this is going to work. And potentially you can have maybe a very good session in one direction, and maybe it's going through an edge somewhere far away. But if this is happening, you can read it in SIP. So you're happy. So, but I would say most likely this is going to be the path, right? safe to assume, but it depends, right? Now, of course, we have two external clients. They will obviously connect to each other if their internal firewall allows it. But of course, they can also hairpin through Edge without any issue. Now it gets more interesting. So now in this case, we add some home user, which has a router and has a private IP and a router with a public IP. So now you know what type of address is going to be reflected here as well, additionally than the other examples. So do you remember what type? No, well, it will have a private, but the other types were private too. Not, well, it's not the net. Well, you need to remember three, so you didn't listen. Like host, reflexive, relay, right? So the reflexive is going to be here. So the reflexive is the public IP and port that we are, well, we probably have multiple, but to simplify it, I would say we have one IP and port. So now in that case, this user has three options to send to this guy, like either direct, either to this public IP or either to Edge. And he will do that. Like, and how will it connect? I don't know, it depends. But you know how the logic builds up, right? So you can find out. Now it doesn't really change for this guy because he will still send it to Edge. Obviously he will have a public IP, but that's not too important for us now. So, and exactly the same thing happened for mediation server, right? Because it's also a client. Now, this scenario adds another user at home with also a home router. So these guys have three possible connection types. So I'm not going to list everything, right? So what is the most likely path they're going to take? Most likely? Well, the first being tried. And direct, right? But it's likely going to be private IP and not on the same Wi-Fi network, because that could potentially happen, right? So if you're on the same room, you will be directly connected. So, but we assume these guys are both at home, so they won't be able to connect directly. Now, what is this guy going to do? He's also going to try to send it to this guy's public IP address and port, because we have it in the SDP, he discovered it, and this guy is going to send it to his public IP, and hopefully media will be established. So in this scenario, this is excellent because there's no Edge component whatsoever in the call path. So this will be the most optimal path. Now, but if we have a very expensive firewall remote or home router device, it will most likely not be a full core net, and potentially this guy doesn't allow internal connections coming from somewhere else, because this guy is not known by the router. So then this guy will have to send it to Edge and it will connect this way. So is it going to flow? I don't know. Well, it depends what's configured, and we don't have any view. We don't know it up front. It's kind of impossible to know, but at least now you know how to look at this, right? Now, it gets even more complex because now we add the VPN. And really, VPN? Who's in favor of VPN? Not really, no. The downside of VPN, well, the advantage of VPN, of course, you can connect to your internal network and your Outlook client will work. And your Skype for Business client will work, right? But it will not be optimal. Now, what is going to happen in this case, this guy, he has a private IP, right? Now he has an additional private IP because the adapter, the VPN adapter, has a private IP belonging to the IP range from the company. Now you remember the priority, right? Like what's this higher priority, like the host IP. Now, if these guys are going to talk to each other, most likely this second VPN IP is going to be able to connect to this guy and vice versa. obviously work, but is it good? No, we don't want that, because VPN brings a lot of stuff and problems to the table. And usually when you do a pilot, they say, like, "What? I love VPN, it works." It works. Yeah, but I tested it, it works good. I heard everything very, very good. I'm like, yeah, but how many people were testing the VPN? Like me. I'm like, yeah, it will probably work, but let's now put 10,000 people on that going over VPN. Let's see how that works. That's probably going to be a problem. And it's going to be a problem, I can tell you, but you probably already know. So this is not from me, it's a public article. So what happens, or explaining how VPN works and what usually happens and how to resolve it. Like, we have to make sure that the media is not going, well, you have to log in. It still says link, but it's valid for Sky for Business too. So we have to connect to Edge. Where is Edge? Edge is here. So we have to log into Edge and make sure that all the media is being blocked from the VPN tunnel, but all the other applications can go over the VPN. Now, that's tricky, because then you're coming like, I have a solution for you, Mr. Customer, because now we're going to do a split tunnel. Yeah, then they stop talking, like, what, are you crazy? Like, no, but it will help you. You will be more satisfied. Now, they will always say, no, that's not what we're going to do. But even I work for large banks, and even if banks decide, yeah, that's the thing we have to do because the audio is not going to be good. So a bank deciding to go split tunnel, and they really do that. So if a bank can do that, everyone can do that. It's just perception, right? It's not, we're not going to introduce real security issues, because we can say, we know the edge server, we know where we're going to. Like, you only need to allow those IP addresses. Like, the rest we don't care about. Like, it's just for Sky for Business. So it's kind of secured, right? So a VPN needs to be able to do that. Now, the tricky part is, if you want to do that, DNS comes into play, and then you have to do funky stuff with DNS. So in order that the client knows, because usually you have the internal DNS servers configured on VPN, and well, you have to be able to connect to Edge. Now, luckily, we have some tools from Microsoft, and I highlighted some of the problems we can have, right? So Stala and Steven talked about CQM, call quality management, and I hope you all have done some testing with call quality management. So, and you will see in there media path VPN, media path relay, and media path or media transport. Now, this will bubble up, look in call detail records, and will bubble up the information that you don't want to see. Like, if you see any of those sessions, well, you can probably not prevent it, but it should be low. Like, if it's going to be high, you have to do some work, because yeah, probably this is a pain point and you need to tackle it. So if we look at VPN, now we can tag it and we can say, okay, the target is less than 100 sessions, for example. Now, the tricky part is, how does Sky for Business know it's VPN? How does it know? No. Excuse me? Nope. No. So it's not subnet, not IP. It's the VPN client's responsibility to flag a switch somewhere in the registry to tell, hey, I'm a VPN client. Tricky, right? Because you have to check whether your client does that. So if it doesn't do that, you will not see it's a VPN client or VPN session. So problematic. So you have to check whether your VPN client can do that, and you will find it in the Skype Operations Framework. I don't remember the path, I didn't put it in here, but in Skype Operations Framework, you will see that. Now, this one, the media path relay, is, it says internal relay media stream count. Like, how many sessions are going between internal clients and still going to Edge? So sometimes it's it's that we want, but usually this is going to be something to look at. Like, we're going to bubble up this information. Now, and the last one is essentially the media transport. And this is going to look at, I'm not sure if it's in here, but so we're looking at non-UDP streams. So if it's going to be TCP, we actually don't want that, because if we do TCP, sessions are packets are being dropped, it will be resent, we don't care about it because it's too late, but we have to reorder. Yeah. Now, sometimes it's not too bad because at least we have a session if it's TCP, and in some cases, there's no other way, right? If you are behind a proxy or something like that, maybe it doesn't work. But sure, be to check out CQM and try to find out how are the media flowing there. So 10 minutes. And then I have some special scenarios. Definitely need to talk about some of those. So the high port range. So that's also a very funny one for the networking people, right? Like, yeah, just open up 10,000 ports and we're good to go. We are happy, but they're not. Like, it's not something we're going to do. So you essentially don't really need them to go inside. Now, I'm not saying that's the best approach, right? I would like to be them in an open state. Now, if your client logs into the server, remember he has the URL of the Edge server and he knows it's external, so he knows where to connect. We fall back to port, the magic port 3478. I call it the magic port because that's actually the very important one to remember. Now, if this port range is going to be open, it will always connect this way, because in the SDP, you will only see the high port range or the high port chosen for you. Now, if that's the case that's been blocked, then you will connect to Edge and it will relay internally, for example, go out to this side. So it's a funky routing internally, but it works. And we're happy because we just need one port. Also, we need outbound ports for one application, well, application sharing, because UDP, we don't really need this, but for application sharing on TCP, yeah, the problem is that the other side can only have one connection to port 443 on TCP and remember where it's coming from. So we need to have some flexibility here. So that's an important one. Now, also have when you have different pools. So this guy is connected to this Edge server and this guy to this Edge server. Stuff happens. So it's different pools. So, and this guy, obviously, so if they cannot connect directly and there's no home router, he will connect to this server and it will hairpin probably this way. And this guy, or so you see, it's maybe not a good drawing, but you see that these Edge servers need to talk to each other if this high port range is not open. Now, it's totally different when this guy talks to his Edge, and this guy, he gets this high port range on the Edge and he knows the IP, so he's going to try to connect here. And that works, so he's going to be bridged. Now, if it's blocked, it's going to be involved the other Edge server as well, which is not always the way we want, but at least we have connectivity. And remember, so this is important because if we are in online or on-premise or hybrid, this comes into play too. Just a quick one, because people sometimes make mistakes here. We have private IPs on the Edge, and we have a public one because it's being netted, and we have two Edge servers. They need to be able to talk this way and this way, and sometimes network people say that's not done, but it needs to happen, because if that's not going to be the case, then media is going to be blocked. So that's an important one. So probably need to log into Wi-Fi. Now, I already explained this scenario. Let me see. So this is an important one I have to explain, like split domain hybrid setup. Split domain hybrid setup. So we have capability on-premise, and we have Skype for Business Online, and we do a hybrid setup. So we can put users in the cloud and on-premise at the same time, and they can talk to each other. Now, this is the on-prem environment. This is the cloud environment. What's essentially happening here? Like, how do you create a hybrid environment? So Edge server needs to talk to Edge server, and essentially it's federated communication, which becomes important here because in that case, so the red guys, they actually are homed in Office 365 and the green guys are homed in Skype for Business. So if they need to talk to each other and stuff is blocked, so if the high port range is open, and probably this user cannot be internal Microsoft, so we'd have to remove this one, it's a mistake. But in this case, this client in online wants to connect to this guy. Now, the port range is not open, the media will go this way. Is this a problem? Maybe, maybe not, unless your tenant is in Singapore, I guess yes, but so that's stuff that's going to happen. Now, Cloud Connector, what's Cloud Connector? So it's a set of custom VMs by Microsoft, but what does it include? Edge server, right? So essentially it's the same thing, right? So it's a federated scenario, right? So this Edge server is federated with Office 365 Edge server, and exactly the same things happen. So Cloud Connector is not, well, it's different from Skype for Business on-premise, but from a perspective, how does it work together? It's the same principle. So that means if you want to optimize your Cloud Connector, just do exactly the same things as you do on Skype for Business. I just have a few minutes. I just want to talk about some stuff here about proxies. So some companies configure, well, they use Office 365 and they use proxies, which is not really what we want, but they send everything through proxy. And maybe the proxy is even the default gateway. Then everything will go through the proxy to Office 365, including, well, the media setup, because it needs to go that way. Is it going to allow UDP? Probably not, right? So it will be most likely TCP, which is going to cause some issues. So what we have to do in that case, like, it's not going to be the default gateway and we send it directly to Skype for Business, and we avoid also the URLs to go to the proxy, but potentially you have to authenticate, doesn't work too. Now, Stala actually mentioned a little bit about it, but how this global Skype for Business deployment works for Microsoft is that you connect as close as you can, and even though your meeting is hosted somewhere else, you will travel over the Microsoft network and not this way around, because it's going to be less good quality. So this is what's supposed to happen. So I'm going to skip this one because Stala talked about it, and I'm just going to conclude with a very special update. Well, Microsoft already explained it a little bit, but they didn't tell us any details. Now, the only thing I want to mention here is they have a blog post which says we have updated IP addresses and ports, by the way. Now, these ports, so you have to remember one magic port with this 3478, right? So now we have 3479, 3478, 0, 3478, 1. Now, Microsoft says you have to open them to Office 365. Now, what they tell us is it may take a little bit more time than the new IP ranges for us to leverage these ports. Not really sure what's going to happen, but the expectation from me would be like we have three ports, we have three media types going to conferences, maybe it's related to that, and we connect somewhere locally and it will magically be better. Not sure, but keep in mind, because sometimes Microsoft will turn this on and then, but
is this going to reflect in some CV on on-premise servers also?
Don't really think so, but as I said, we don't have the information right now. And I think I came to the end of my presentation. So, okay, some other sessions you could watch are those from Thomas Binder. Excellent sessions. It's explained a little bit differently than I did. But of course, Thomas is really techie. And if you're an engineer, you're really like this. And additionally, so don't forget, we have another session coming up about As the Experts. All the speakers will be there and we will be giving away these fancy things. So don't miss this opportunity. Thanks to all our sponsors and hope to see you maybe next year.